Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
And welcome to... Are we playing the iTent? What are we doing?
Yes, it's playing. It is played, I think.
Yeah, right, the iTent is on. And it'll probably finish by now.
Probably.
Yeah. So, welcome to Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club. I almost always get to the end and then I mess it up somewhere.
So you say Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club?
Yeah, but it should be Family Size Fan Club.
Should be. But I don't value.
Do you know what? I haven't got to where I am today by sticking to the details. Oh my god. So my name is Nick Helm.
And my name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Fan Club.
Nick
and
Nathaniel Metcalf's
Fan Club.
Yeah.
And we are broadcasting from Camp COVID.
We're in our respective houses.
I'm in my spare room. I've changed things around.
Yeah, you have.
I've finally done what I've been putting off for about a year, and I've finally sort of started getting my spare room office in order.
I guess this is an office. I guess it's not really a spare room. It hasn't got a bed in it.
It's a laundry room, that.
Yeah, it's got the dryer in it and stuff.
We can see exactly what it is. There's no point in saying that it's an office. Mine is definitely an office.
It's like an executive office.
Mine is like an executive office, yeah. But yours is definitely a laundry room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas my flat, this is the only room that hasn't got laundry in it in my flat. It's just everywhere. Have you noticed that first rule of Fan Club, tell your friends about Fan Club.
Second rule
of Fan Club, just fucking tell your friends. If not now, when the nation needs to be uplifted, then when? What are you waiting for? What are you bloody waiting for? Have you noticed that when you are just spending all this time indoors, your life just becomes a constant cycle of cleaning things and then getting them dirty again? Whether it be plates, laundry, your cock, it's an endless cycle. You just say, oh, bloody hell, that's all I need. Cleaning this up again. Every 5 minutes, it seems, you just need to get something clean. Mm-hmm. To be fair, it's generally not unrelated in terms of genitalia and clothing and plates, unfortunately. But it's whatever is within spitting distance. So anyway,
I think there's
it's like Christmas, but on your own.
But I guess there is a temptation to not do that, which is you should do that. I think there's a temptation not to get up and do all your washing.
Oh right,
getting changed all the time. Changing all my clothes, washing my clothes, washing my sheets. Everything's the cycle is happening quite swiftly. I quite like that. It feels like I get up and get dressed because I don't want to sit about and feel like I'm just sort of sat around in my pants all day. So I want to get dressed and get up.
Yeah, you're pretty good at giving yourself a routine and do it. But then you've got like a real job in the real world, haven't you?
Yeah, but this is exactly why, I think, because it gives me, this is almost like letting me off the hook, but I don't want it to.
No, I know, but then that gets you in training, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, whereas if I've got like a gig in the evening, I actually don't have to get up.
Yeah.
I can get up at, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night and still go to work and, you know, do a full, you know, 20 minutes day's
20
work.
Minutes. Yeah.
So that gets you in sort of like a very, very bad sort of like mental cycle. Whereas, you know, you have like the rigidity of like a schedule that you've got to sort of like go by, and that must be quite good for keeping your brain in order while
it's
you're doing
it. Enough. It's not so good. Like I thought it'd be better for me actually getting other work done, which I'm not doing very well.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? Every time I'm just sort of like, I sit down to get any work done, I just look at my flat and it's an absolute shithole. And I'm just like, I can't. And the thing is, when you have the option of, you know, like I would go to the Soho Theatre and do some writing in the Soho Theatre in the day, I could do, you know, on a normal day, because you look around your flat and you go, well, I need to tidy it and I can't work under these conditions. And, you know, if you can leave your flat, you can just sort of like close the door and all of that and just and not have to look at it. But when you're surrounded by it, you know, I mean, I've tidied up this room. Yeah. But that means I've basically transferred all of the shit into every other room. I filtered it through. So now this room is, from what you can see on this screen, this room looks vaguely presentable. It's not. I mean, it's just, you saw me just shift all the shit off my sofa. And now I've barricaded myself into the room. I can't get out. I'm going to have to move it all back again at the end of this, right? But the thing is, it's basically like a really shit, slow, just endless game of Tetris where, or it's not even, it's that puzzle game.
It's the puzzle game, that's exactly it.
Where you're sliding stuff all the way around your flat and then you're kind of like, oh God, I've got nowhere to sit in my living room now. So you just got to pick it all up, put it in the spare room. It's a fucking, I don't know about you guys, but it's a fucking nightmare. but yeah, no, I'm all right. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right. I'm not bad today, actually. Not bad.
Are we mentioning Nick Helm?
I was going to say, Nick Helm, what have you been a fan of during your isolation period?
I'll tell you what I've not been a fan of.
Go on.
I watched the Tom and Jerry movie the other day. I wanted to get some sort of... Do you know when you watch like old cartoons and... And it's sort of comforting, you know?
Yeah. Charming.
Yeah, and it's sort of like that sort of thing that you can sort of like just switch on. Especially, you know, it's the sort of thing that you can have something on in the background while you're working on getting on with stuff, and they're sort of like these 5 minute and stuff. And so I downloaded, now that I've got my TV, I just downloaded a load of Tom and Jerry stuff. And the Tom and Jerry movie came out. I'd heard it wasn't very good.
What year is this from? It's quite modern, right?
It's the 90s. It came out. Ah, it must have been coming out around the same time as Old Dogs Go to Heaven. Is it called that, Old Dogs Go to Heaven?
Oh, yeah, yeah, like early 90s.
Yeah. Hang on, Tom and Jerry movie. Right, that came out in 1992, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's around the same time as...
Don Bluth's Old Dogs Go to Heaven.
Old Dogs Go to Heaven, American Tale of Five Who Goes West. And, yeah. Which wasn't Don Bluth. Did you know that?
No.
Don Bluth did the first one, fell out with Steven Spielberg, and then Steven Spielberg did the second one. And So round about that, I think when Jurassic Park came out, everyone went dinosaur crazy. No, We're Back, A Dinosaur's Tale came out in 1993, when everyone was going dinosaur crazy. But The Land Before Time, I'm pretty sure... I went to see that when my sister went to see Batman. So that must have been 1989.
Yeah, I'd say it was about then. 1990-ish.
Do you know how many fucking sequels that film's got?
Yeah, I remember seeing that on video. There was like 88, apparently, for Land Before Time. Is that right, Alec? Yeah.
Well, I definitely remember seeing it when my sister went to see Batman, so...
Probably had a long tail.
So maybe... I'm not even going to acknowledge that.
89 in the UK.
I think probably, yeah. Got, you know, we always used to get stuff like almost a year later sometimes. Mm. Yeah, it's got something, it's got something like 13 or 14 sequels.
Like, I thought it had 6 or 7.
No, it goes into the teens. Like, they use like Roman numerals, and I just know that it's fucking crazy. They do deteriorate. I mean, I've seen any of them. I've seen the first one, the original and best. But then... Yeah. You know, you're just flogging a dead dinosaur. So I watched the Tom and Jerry movie, 1992. So there was so context, there's other stuff going around. Fucking hell, like Tom and Jerry were a thing, you know, that they used to win those. I mean, back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean the 40s and 50s. I'm sure they used to get like Oscars, if not Oscars, they got nominated for Oscars.
Yeah, probably like, shorts, right?
And the animation in them is just is beautiful and slick. Yeah, sure, they're racist, but you know, if you can overlook that for good storytelling, then why not?
They're early Hanna-Barbera as well, right? That's
So Hanna-Barbera, they sort of like revolutionized the art in repeating your backgrounds.
Right.
So everything was kind of like hand drawn and intricately done cell by cell and painted and like all these different departments. And Hanna-Barbera were just like, right, we're going to put it. They kind of like went, we're going to do animation, but we're going to do it on TV. And then they managed, with the Flintstones, they managed to work out a way to do it dirt cheap. So they reused loads of animation and they reused the background. There was that joke. But apparently one of the jokes that was cut out of the Flintstones movie in 1993, part of the dinosaur craze, was they wanted to build like 13 identical living room sets on a soundstage and they were going to run all the way through them.
That'd be nice.
That was sort of like, but then you just like go, how much money are you actually going to spend on this thing? Do you know what I mean?
I didn't realise in that, making a little aside, two Flintstones asides.
I mean, one. This is an aside to an aside to an aside.
Sure, we're going to bring it back.
Yeah, we're going to bring it back.
We always do. so, one, Flintstones was broadcast as like a primetime cartoon, yeah. Like The Simpsons was. So it was very much like The Simpsons of its day. And would go out on primetime American TV. It wasn't like a kid show. It was sort of a show for like adults.
It was meant to be an animated version of The Honeymooners.
Yeah.
To the point where the people that made The Honeymooners, who was the star of The Honeymooners?
It was Jackie Gleason on it?
Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason was going to sue the Flintstones.
Oh, really?
Because it was such a rip-off of The Honeymooners that it was just like, you can't, I mean, that's my show. They animate. And then it got to a point he said, I don't want to be the guy that sues Fred Flintstone. So they didn't. So
I think Flintstones as well was the first TV show in the States where Fred and Wilma were in bed together, seemed to be in bed together. I think because it was a cartoon, it wasn't seen as controversial.
It was the first cartoon, when was it, in the 60s, 50s?
Yeah, 60s.
It was the first cum shot on TV.
All right, because it was a cartoon.
It was the first animated anal scene anywhere.
Which I think is probably wise then. They put it out prime time and not in the kids slot.
Yeah, well,
so there's been a bit of responsibility.
Don't want to put it in the kids slot, mate. that's what AD stood for. It was anal anal dinosaur.
And they changed the name to the Flintstones afterwards because it didn't test well.
Well, it's originally called the Fuckstones, but Wilma! And she'd be like, I'm right here. Do you have to shout in my face every time? Well, I suppose it'd be shouting in the back of her head. Anyway.
I didn't realise how big. You know, the Flintstones film, I sort of think of it as being a bit of a flop, but it made tons of money. I didn't know that.
I went to, do you know what? I didn't have any friends at school. I went to see that by myself. Can you imagine going to see the Flintstones by yourself? Oh, my God. Ticket, one for the Flintstones, please. And then I went off to the comic shop afterwards. I think it was about the same time. I mean, you can say, it was about the same time as the Star Wars Renaissance. When they started bringing out Topps cards and stuff like that. Because there was nothing Star Wars-y in the early 90s. Late 80s, and then they started doing stuff as the build up towards, oh, he's going to do some special editions and he's going to do some sequels, so we better get people that interested in Star Wars and stuff like that. Anyway, so Flintstones movie, yeah, it's just, you just knew at the time it was shit, right?
Yeah, it didn't feel like a good movie.
Yabba dabba don't. That's what they were saying, wasn't it?
The original plan was to get Sharon Stone in it to play the character Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone, yeah, which would have been great. And they couldn't get her, so they got Halle Berry.
And what did they call her?
Sharon Stone.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
They should have, I mean, Shaley Berry. You know, because they worked at a gravel pit, didn't they?
Yeah.
With the shale and stuff like that.
But as soon as she said no, they should just go, oh, let's drop that bit then. Just give her a different name.
I don't know. It's lucky that they managed to get Steven Spielrock to produce it. It was awful. It was really. Anyway, I saw the Tom and Jerry movie, 1992. So there was Disney films. So Little Mermaid had come out. All Dogs Go to Heaven and all that had come out. The quality of the animation in those films is excellent. This is Hanna-Barbera. It's an actual, legitimate, established animation house. The animation is so bad, right? It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how bad the animation is, right? And like, you're watching it, and like, fucking 10 minutes into it, a dog comes out called Patches, and everyone, I posted about it on Twitter, and everyone was like going, oh my god, they poochied Tom and Jerry, you know, like Poochy from Itchy and Scratchy. And this Patches dog comes up and he says, hey, I'm Patches. And then Tom goes, I'm Tom. And Jerry goes, and I'm Jerry. Right? And then they look at each other and they go, you can talk? And then they talk for the rest of the fucking film. And fucking Tom sounds like Peter Griffin out of Family Guy. And Jerry is kind of like voiced by, I don't know, I'm assuming a woman in her 40s. But it was just awful. And then they sing, and the first song comes 20 minutes in, and then it's almost like, we haven't had any songs for 20 minutes, so we better just, and the film's only an hour and 20 minutes. So they just put song after song after song that are just sort of like, they're all sort of like average, but the animation to back it up is just pathetic. It was just absolute shit, but like proper shit. You just like go, how do you have the nerve to even release this? And aren't you embarrassed for yourselves? And then, could we talk about this show? And then it's just like, the first song that they sing is about how, because they're homeless, because Tom's owner moves, and because it's almost like a plot, it's almost like the whole plot is like the last 10 minutes from Toy Story 1.
Right.
You know, where Woody and Buzz are fighting and they miss the lift to the next place. And now Tom and Jerry are sort of like abandoned. And then the dog basically says to them, you two, you can't fight. You need each other. You've got to be friends. So they sing a song about how they're going to be best friends.
That's the whole point of Tom and Jerry.
They spend the rest of the film not fighting with each other.
Oh, God.
And talking and singing about being friends and helping an orphan girl. And it's just like, if you... On day one, someone says, I'm thinking about we should do maybe a Tom and Jerry movie. And someone goes, yeah, sure, that's a good idea. What ideas have we got for plot? Well, they're going to have to talk and they're going to have to sing and they probably can't fight for the whole time. So they'll probably have to be best friends. And you go, do you know what? Let's not bother then. If that's the best idea we've got, let's not bother. But they didn't really bother because the actual film is so appalling.
Straight to video Tom and Jerry movie from a couple of years ago where Tom and Jerry are in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, right.
And it's drawn to be like the Gene Wilder version of it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Came out long after the Johnny Depp one and everything. And right. They're just sort of in the background and all the drawings are sort of poorly animated versions of the characters from the Gene Wilder version. And they're just there also. Sort of just like messing about in shot.
Yeah.
Just what a bizarre film.
It's awful.
Whose idea was that? Like, why was that anyone's good idea?
But it was like when they stopped, everyone stopped caring after a certain while. So you have like Muppets Christmas, you had like the original cycle of Muppets film.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started doing like, well, we'll cast the Muppets as famous people. And, as famous characters from literature. So they did Muppets Christmas Carol, which I think is great. Hated Muppets Treasure Island at the time in the cinema, and I just feel like the actors take such a lead role, and the Muppets are so far in the background, like because they stuck true to the book, like Kermit's not in it that much.
Yeah.
You go, well, that's what we're here for, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's the captain of the ship, you know. And so I'm not a fan of that. And then
Muppets in Space.
Muppets in Space. Muppets from Space.
From Space.
I watched that. I didn't bother watching that at the time when it came out. It looked shit, and I watched it recently. It's really good. Like, it's really good. It's the tone of it is really funny. I'm not a huge into Muppets, but I
There's a lot more, though, that no one gets talked about, because they made lots of kind of, when Disney had it originally, they made lots of kind of, I guess they were TV movies.
Then they did Muppets Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, Muppets Wizard of Oz.
And that is shit. That is so fucking shit. And you just like go, you know that if you actually made an effort, you could have released this as a theatrical film and it could have been great. But there's just no love attached to it. And yeah, Muppets.
There's Muppets, It's a Wonderful Life.
No.
There is. I've got it.
Kermit going to throw it? Kermit's going to kill himself. How dark is that? That's fucking...
About as dark as It's a Wonderful Life is.
Yeah, but yeah.
Which everyone thinks isn't dark.
I remember I had to go, I watched It's a Wonderful Life before a shift at the pub, but I had to leave 20 minutes before it ended. And it was so depressing. It was just like the longest shift where you're just like, oh, everything's really shit. It's only like the 5 minutes at the end where it all picks up again.
Yeah,
not even 5 minutes.
That's all you get.
It's probably like 2 or 3 minutes at the end of something that's a bit like, oh, it's all worth it, but you have to go through. It's like Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
You know, if you had to switch to Shawshank Redemption off just after he went to the laundry with the sisters, and it's like,
at the end,
you go, oh, no. Yeah, fucking hell. Anyway, so that's what I've not been a fan of, was Tom and Jerry the movie. What about you? What have you been a fan of?
I watched all of the Hammer Frankenstein movies.
All of them?
All of them, except for Horror Frankenstein, which isn't really one of them, because it hasn't got Peter Cushing in it. Although, having said that, they're not really... The first two are definite kind of sequels to one another, or definitely in the same thing. Then after that, even though they've all got Peter Cushing in, apart from Horror Frankenstein, and he always plays Frankenstein, there's like no continuity between them. Mm. They just they go all over the shop after that.
How many are there?
Oh, about 8. Hang on, let me see. I've got them all right there.
Between which years?
Oh, they do the whole gamut of Hammer. So they do 57 is the first one, and they go right up to 74 is the last one.
That's really interesting. Because 56.
57.
I mean, we can't hear Natalie.
56?
57
is the first one.
Write it on a piece of paper and held it up. I don't know what your gesture is.
Oh, 6 films, he's saying. But actually, there's not. There's Curse of Frankenstein, 57. Revenge of Frankenstein, 58. Evil of Frankenstein, 64. Frankenstein Created Woman, 67. Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, 69. Horror Frankenstein, sort of part of it. And Frankenstein, the Monster of Hell is 74. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 if you include Horror Frankenstein.
Well, that's, I mean, so what's that? That's like about a 15...
Yeah.
17-year like period?
14-year period, yeah.
But Universal was still making films up in the 50s.
Yeah.
So do you think it was called Curse of Frankenstein because they were kind of trying to cash in on the Universal films and sort of like pose it as a bit of a sequel?
Well, not because they're sort of like the opposite of the Universal ones at the beginning, and they're not allowed to use any of the Universal still have rights to all the kind of makeup and things.
Sure,
so they have to go against it.
Sure, but when you're just looking at a poster and it says "Curse of Frankenstein," at the time you would buy a ticket and.
Probably. It's just, there's probably been enough stuff that you would imagine.
They were making
I think at the point all those Universal ones were kind of parodying themselves, and this one was like. In colour, violent, especially violent for the time, with lots of kind of full colour blood and guts, yeah.
And sex.
Kind of came a bit later, but yeah.
Don't forget the sex. And there's lots of sex. And Wolfman was sort of like 50s.
When
was
that?
Was it 51 or 55? And then you also, around the 70s, you had, like, Count Yorga.
Yeah.
Who came along. And that's kind of like, that's sort of like a Hammer film, but I think I know this is sacrilege, but I've never really got into Hammer. I've tried, but I've never really got into Hammer. Whereas something like Count Yorga, I really loved. And what did I watch recently that was sort of like a Hammer film? That I probably haven't got it here. Oh yeah, all of the Roger Cormans.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they are. Really a lot like.
So the Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe films. I mean, they are just fucking incredible. But I think, I went through, they got better in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Mask of the Red Death was one of the later ones.
And
that is just such a beautiful, cool film. All of those Hammer movies were absolutely incredible. I'll tell you what I watched. Have you ever seen Seance on a Wet Afternoon?
No, I haven't.
It is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, really?
It is. I would probably not. I won't be hyperbolic about it, but it is definitely one of the best films ever made by anyone.
Right. Do you know what? It is one. Amazon, it's always in my recommended thing at the bottom. And I do think Amazon are very good at choosing things for me.
Yeah, it's great. Richard Attenborough is in it. And it's got Nanette Newman in it. And it stars a woman called Kim Stanley, who is a theatre actress. And she didn't really make any films after this. I think this was like her main sort of like film. And she was really difficult. She was method, and she was really difficult to work with on set. But she's incredible. It's just, she's incredible in it. I've seen Richard Attenborough and stuff. And obviously, when you're like growing up and you see him in Jurassic Park and Miracle on 34th Street, and you're kind of like used to older Richard Attenborough as a kid, I never really sort of like knew him as a director until later on. And obviously, he's in Great Escape and stuff like that. And you go, yeah, Richard Attenborough. But he's not one of the greats. You know, he had like a long career. But in terms of actors, you know, you go with your Michael Caines and your Peter O'Toole's, you know. Richard Attenborough isn't really on that list, except for in Seance on a Wet Afternoon. He is absolutely stunning in this film. And if you haven't seen Seance on a Wet Afternoon, you haven't really seen Richard Attenborough to the full of his ability. He's just incredible in it.
What prompted you to get it? What was the thing that made you...
It was called Seance on a Wet Afternoon, and I thought the title alone just made me think, that looks good. I'll give that a go. It's black and white. It's a black and white British film directed by Brian Forbes. And I was just like, yeah, I would absolutely... The music was by John Barry. And I was like, I'll absolutely give that a little go. And if anything, I'll put it on a rainy Sunday afternoon. And it will just, you know, and it will be on in the background or whatever. And it's absolutely riveting. It's one of the most tense films I've ever seen. 1964 it's made. And it was, yeah, just absolutely. Yeah, I don't really want to give much away, but it's basically, there's a living room medium who comes up with a plan to kidnap a girl. And then she'll use her psychic powers to sort of find the girl. And then, she'll become famous. And Richard Attenborough plays her husband.
I think it's Brian Forbes as well from, I think, a slightly earlier period with Attenborough, one called League of Gentlemen, which is, it's all people who are kind of above reproach. So they're all kind of quite high status people in the community, like judges and colonels and things who are very respected, right, who decide that they're going to do a robbery because right, they're sort of seen as being almost above the law and
no,
it's great. Yeah, absolutely great.
I've not seen that, but basically I mean, it's really interesting because it's like an independent film. Richard Attenborough's career was really not going anywhere, and so Richard Attenborough, basically, he produced it. He bought the rights to a book. I think it was based on a book. He bought the rights to a book. And he hired the writer, and then they wrote this script. Oh, I think it was written by, was it written by him? I think it was written by Brian Forbes as well. Based on the novel by Mark McShane. Written for the screen by Brian Forbes. So basically, him, Richard Attenborough and Brian Forbes were a team, a power couple, who Richard would sort of like find the material, and then he'd hand it over to Brian. Brian would write it, and then he'd write and direct, and Richard Attenborough would produce and star in. And basically, it was like, it's just this really, it's weird because It's like what I was saying about Gaslight, that original, the 1940 Gaslight, which is just, it's so tense that it's just, it feels, because when you watch older films, you sort of like change gears in your head a little bit sometimes and go, you make allowance for the pacing and for kind of like the quaintness of it sometimes. And I can enjoy any film like that, if it's good, you know. But sometimes when you see like a film like the original Gaslight, because the second one, the remake of Gaslight sort of falls into sort of like the melodrama. I mean, it is a melodrama, but the second one falls into the traps of actually being quite a dull melodrama in places, whereas the original Gaslight is so tense. And with this one, Seance in a Wet Afternoon, it's black and white. It's so tense that it transports you to then. And it's and because of that, it just feels incredibly modern. I just loved it. I just loved it. It was So I really, if you've been meaning to watch it, I really recommend that.
Yeah, well, it just keeps popping up as being recommended for me, but I didn't know anything about it. But you've absolutely convinced me. I really want to see it.
It's so good. But literally, chuck your phone away and just concentrate on it and turn the volume up.
I don't want to chuck my phone away. It seems extreme.
Just put it in the fucking bin and then take it out.
Costs a lot of money.
Into the street. Yeah, but you know what? You'll thank me. It's money well spent because it will give you an experience that you will forget until you see the DVD on a stack of DVDs that you watched 3 weeks ago, and then you'll remember it, and then you'll tell me about it. And you can't put a price on that, can you, Nat?
I suppose not, no.
So put your phone in the bin, and then just to make sure that you don't fish it out again, do a little piss on it. So
I reckon if I did a little piss on it, I'd still take it out of the bin and try and put some rice on it. Not the piss. I'm not an animal.
Imagine that. Just fishing the piss out of the bin and leaving the phone. And then putting rice in. Yeah. Actually, it's weird, isn't it, that I've suddenly become hungry.
Yeah. I mean, we're in quarantine and food is
Do you think if your piss was hot enough, you could actually cook the rice?
I don't know. I should try and do that in a Tomorrow's World.
I'll do it today, actually. I think I'll do it later.
It's an experiment, isn't it? Science. Have you got a science program on FUBAR? No.
You have now.
There we go.
So yeah. Anyway, so that's what I think. I thought it was just really, really great, and I loved it. That was it. I saw Spasmo.
Oh yeah, I've not seen that.
It's fine. Spasmo. I saw a film called Spasmo. It's
a one watch.
It's an Italian giallo, like most of them. It's an Italian giallo. It's got this. Who is it? I think her name's Susie Kendall, and she is.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
She's in. Bird with Crystal Plumage, I think, right?
Is that would make sense. Yeah, Bird with the Crystal Plumage. She's absolutely stunning. Just. Oh, look, my Siri just. How do I activate Siri?
Hey, Siri. Stunning.
Can you look up Spasmo?
Okay, searching for Speller on the App Store.
Nah, it's rubbish, isn't it? It's rubbish. It's rubbish.
Rubbish don't work.
It's rubbish technology. That's what happens when you piss on your phone, mate. Siri's got piss in her ears. Not for the first time. So lonely. So, Spasmo is this Italian giallo film. It's good, but like you say, like most of these giallos, they are one watches normally.
This week actually watched A Blade in the Dark, which is my second watch. It's very good.
I've got that on DVD. Is that the one? Is that quite modern?
Yes, it's really like 80s.
Yeah, 80s, and it's got a nice front cover, and I think I've started it. Does it start with a ball bouncing down some stairs?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. I've started it like 5 times. I've never got through it. But
I was sort of thinking about it because apparently it's one of those ones, the girl with the ball is based on the one in Mario Bava's Kill Baby Kill.
Which is fucking incredible.
Yeah,
And that's the period one, right?
Yeah, yeah. That again is like a sort of hammer, but done like incredibly.
Kill Baby Kill. It's like a hammer on acid. It's so vivid.
Psychedelic.
Yeah, psychedelic. All the colours are so vivid. I mean, it's like a Roger Corman, really.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking hell. Yeah, Kill Baby Kill. If you're listening and you want to watch, if you're listening, please send love. If you're listening, then Kill Baby Kill. Gothic horror. If you're interested in getting into sort of like, or if you're a Hammer fan and you've watched all the Hammer films, or if you're a Universal Monster film, but you can't get into Hammer like me, I would say Kill Baby Kill is kind of, is that a good sort of like bridge? And also all the Roger Corman, Vincent Price films, they're just, but Italian giallos are just fine. I mean, they are what they are. They're called giallos because of the, like Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
It was called Pulp Fiction because the paper that the stories were written on were pulpy.
Novels, pulp novels.
Cheap pulp paper. And the giallos, giallo is yellow in Italian. We've talked about this before, but you know, if you don't want to go back and listen to all the episodes. And so they were based on disposable, trashy airport novels that you pick up and you read on holiday or you read on the beach. And that's exactly what the films are. They're really disposable. And the other thing about them was that they would sort of like release them like really regularly. I mean, the connections to the spaghetti westerns we've gone over, but they were basically spaghetti thrillers. And the same way of doing it, they'd sort of like have Italian crews, and then they would cast sort of like one international name, and then everyone else would be European, and everyone would speak their own language, and then they would dub it all. And what would happen was they would put loads of sex and loads of extreme violence in the films, because they would release them at the cinema and it would be the one time a week where the whole town or the whole village, they'd all go to the cinema and it would be like their social outing, and they would talk over the entire film, right? And they would just talk at normal volume, and then every so often there'd be like this horrific murder. Everyone would shut up, watch the murder, and then they'd go back to their conversations, or there'd be like this sex scene and everyone would stop, watch the sex scene, and then they'd go back to their conversation. So the reason it's...
It'd be like seeing like a cult film at the Prince Charles Cinema, but where occasionally they would stop talking.
Yeah. And, but the thing is, it's sort of like, oh, now that you can get them on Blu-rays and they're kind of, they have loads of extras and they're given like this prestige treatment, it's kind of elevating it to a status that they were never really meant to have.
No. I think that's it. I think amongst that, like every genre or subgenre, amongst that, there's usually five or six that are just absolute stone cold classics up against any other film.
Yeah.
But most of them, yeah, are kind of like, they're totally fine, one watches, and they're like, you know, that's what they are, totally disposable. You enjoy it, you might never think about them again.
But Spasmo, I started watching Spasmo, and I thought it was maybe the film that me and you went to see that we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah, we were just talking about.
So what was that film called?
I think it's called One on Top of the Other.
Did Edgar Wright introduce it, or was he just in the cinema?
Oh, I think he was just there, I think he was right. Just there.
But there was some sort of intro, right? Someone gave it.
Yeah.
I just love it. But anyway, what I wanted to say was about when we went to the pub beforehand.
Yes.
And we went to, how many years ago? It was 4 years ago. Because,
4 years ago.
Yeah. So we went to the pub. Was it before or after?
I think it was before.
And we were waiting.
It was before.
We went to the Barbican. We went to the screen over the road from the Barbican, which is weird because that's where we also went to see Deep Red as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We saw that in the main house in the Barbican.
In the main house.
And which is, I think, the best cinematic experience I've ever had. And we went to the pub, and I was on a diet at the time, so I wasn't eating carbs. And Nat went to the bar, and it was a really busy bar, and it was really noisy, and he was like 30 feet away on the other side of the bar, and he looked at me, and he was just like, he minds, do you want a snack? She said, do you want a speck? Like, he mimed it. And I mimed back, yes, jerky. And Nat sort of like repeated it back to me. And I was just like, yes, jerky, jerky. And he went away. And then when he came back, he had 2 packets of crisps. And I was like, hey, what's this? And he'd only gone and bloody bought turkey flavoured crisps. And you go, it was May. What were they doing selling turkey flavoured crisps?
What was actually happening in my mind was, I was trying to go, do you want some crisps? And you mouthed to me what sounded like turkey. And I pulled a face as if to go, they won't have turkey flavoured crisps. And then weirdly, I looked at the selection of crisps and one of them was turkey. And I went, oh no, fair enough.
Nick must have been here before. He knows that it's the one pub in May in the whole of London that sells turkey flavoured crisps. Oh, I mean, it's not a great anecdote, but it's one I've remembered for 4 years. I think it's funny. I think
it's just the mouthing of jerky to me and going almost like no, and then seeing him and doing that thumbs up like oh yeah, no, I got him.
I got him. Don't worry, I got him. Really funny. I remember that. I think was it maybe it was before MacFest. I remember I went on stage several times and I told that story and no one got on board. But the great thing about a podcast is you don't get instant feedback.
Yeah.
So we can just talk about whatever we like. It's probably time for a song, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So we're playing Alice Cooper. It's off a fucking terrible album. It's either off Racial Piston Yell or it's off Constrictor. Yeah. Those two albums are interchangeable for me on how, I mean, they're awful.
There it is.
Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
And we're back! Here we are in the house. Literally.
We've basically gone through so many Alice Cooper songs now, we're playing not the hits.
I'm saving a couple back, but yeah, there's sort of like Teenage Frankenstein is off Constrictor, I think. There's very little on Raise Your Fist.
And also, there's not much fun in playing all the big hits either, is there?
I've deliberately, which is weird actually, because I've got this, I've literally got a pin badge right here of Constrictor, and I think I also have a pin badge for Raise Your Fist and Yell somewhere, but none of his other albums. Fucking hell, I mean, oh yeah, I've got Schools Out there as well. I mean, I do love him, and I am sort of like, we are getting to a point where I am now having to pick a dud every other week and sort of like eke out the last really good ones. But how long have we been going? How many episodes have we done?
80 something, isn't it? I mean, it's not 90 now.
If you can do 30 albums with at least 10 tracks on per album, and then, or I think 8 were on the first few, and then get to the point where you've got 80 good songs on there.
Yeah.
He's not embarrassed. He's not embarrassed himself. Although, you know, he was weaning himself off crack when he made those two albums, so you can forgive him. It was just before Trash. Anyway, so should we do some fan mail? How do we do this? Oh, I've got the chat.
To go back up to the top of the chat, right?
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, do you know what? I'm going to get it off full screen, and then I can read the fan mail. You're going to play the music in, yeah?
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, so playing the music in post. That's what we call it in the industry now. Dear Nick and Nat, my mum Gillian is a huge fan of the show, and I would love for you to give her a shout-out. She has been a gem and has put up with me while we self-isolate together. Or you could just call her a massive cunt. Up to you. Cheers, Caitlin. Well, Gillian, you've been a real brick and a cunt. So, be locked down. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. People are like, oh, you swear a lot. People write in to be insulted. It's weird. What's it like? It's like in The Running Man, when all of the contestants are turning up at the thing, and Buzzsaw punches someone in the face, doesn't he? And someone goes, he punched me! He punched me! Buzzsaw punched me! Like, it's like a thing. So it's exactly like that, really. In a way, you're all cats. Dear Nick and Nat, hope you're both happy and healthy. You were looking for some recommendations, etc., in your tweet. I'm self-isolating at the moment. Yeah, we all are. So I've got... Well, we're not all, are we? Naughty people. Absolutely. Absolutely terrible. Fucking hell. Oh, fucking hell. I think I caught COVID off a teenager I was fingering in the park the other day, actually. It's terrible. Dear Nick and Nat, hope you're both happy and healthy. You were looking for some recommendations, etc., in your tweets. I'm self-isolating at the moment, so I've got some time. You'll never get this level of detail from me again once I'm back on the front lines of Pick and Choose, if there's anything in here that's worth discussing. Currently loving the film classics in the morning. This is Karen, isn't it? Yeah. Currently loving the film classics in the morning. Saw Gaslight. And have the other one on order. Yeah, I mean, you saw the 1944 version, which is absolutely fine. It's good, but there happens to be a much better version. And The Lady from Shanghai, never seen it, but that is produced by, do you know who it's produced by?
William Castle.
William Castle. Did you read that book I got you?
Yeah.
It's a good book.
I've also got Lady from Shanghai.
Oh, right. Well, maybe I'll watch that later. I won't borrow it off you.
You know what? I thought it was, it's obviously one of those things that people say, what an absolute classic it is. I was a bit, it's all right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Orson Welles wrote it, starred in it, directed it.
Yeah.
But basically, William Castle really wanted to direct it.
It was his book. He basically got the rights to the book and was trying to get it made to make, a proper movie. I think he spoke to Orson Welles about it and said, I've basically got this amazing film. Would you produce it for me? And Orson Welles read it and he went, yeah, not only that, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah. He was, because they were part of the same repertory, how do you say that word? Repertory Theatre Company when they first started out, weren't they?
Yeah.
And it's a shame. William Castle got stiffed like over and over again where, you know, he had to keep making these schlocky films, but he really is. And not about, like, he's very much kind of like, he was like the bargain basement Alfred Hitchcock, but he was also like almost an equal to Roger Corman. Whereas Roger Corman was just cutting corners and trying to make the cheapest product possible, William Castle would be kind of like, right, how many gimmicks can we fit into this so that we can sell it, sell tickets, you know, sell a mediocre product in kind of like in a big theatre opening weekend before people find out that it's shit. But William Castle.
He also, the same thing happened with Rosemary's Baby, right? He had the rights to that and was going to make it.
And Roman Polanski came along and said, I'm going to direct it. William Castle was like, I would really like to fucking trust. And then he gave it over. And then obviously it won Oscars. But he's got a cameo in it, hasn't
he? Yeah, he's got a cameo in it. And I think he's exec producer or he's producer or something again from that.
Oh, yeah. It's his thing. It's a William Castle production, which is weird because he was also doing The Tingler and 13 Ghosts and House on Haunted Hill and all this other stuff. And they're like really schlocky stuff. And then he made this Oscar winning, prestigious sort of movie that was starring Mia Farrow.
That would be the end of his Ed Wood movie, wouldn't it? That would be the bit where he actually does get to make an Oscar movie.
Yeah, he finally got to do it, but he wasn't allowed to direct it. But yeah, so he also worked with Orson Welles, Lady in Shanghai. Never seen it, but that book is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he is just so, I found it laugh out loud funny, and also he's just incredibly likable. And also because he was like into, he made schlocky movies. The book is like bookended by the fact that he's written it from beyond the grave.
Yes.
Because it came out after he died. And so the end is, I'm dead now, but thank you for reading my book. And it's kind of like, and you kind of like think, oh, he would have liked that.
It's called Ladies and Gentlemen, I'm Gonna Scare the Pants Off America.
Yeah,
it's a great title for a book.
It's such a good book. And he's so, like, you read books by comedians that aren't funny. Mm. You know, this is sort of like, he's just this really funny, down-to-earth, old-timey.
And again, he's one of them people that, when you watch any of the documentaries about him, everyone's just saying, he's lovely.
Yeah.
He's great. He's like such a great guy to hang out with.
Comes across as nice. But I've always really liked Roger Corman as well. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, is he still around? He's still around, isn't he?
Corman, yeah. Yeah. It was his birthday the other day, I think.
Yeah, wasn't it? Didn't I retweet that even?
Maybe.
I'm watching, and I tell you what I saw that's on Netflix is Humanoids from the Deep. That is a fucking brilliant film made in 1980. It's a Roger Corman, he didn't direct it, he produced it, but it's a Roger Corman one. And it's got this really cool front cover, this really cool poster on Netflix. And it is just, it's like got everything it's got. Gore and violence and nudity, and it's quirky, and it's just exactly what you want from like one of those B pictures. It's that's phenomenal. Anyway,
Corman is 94, according to Natalie.
Just fucking hell, fucking hell. I mean, I love him. Lady from Shanghai, love the scene near the end, but I don't know whether you've seen it yet, Nick, so I won't spoil it. Yes, I haven't seen it. We'll do one more and then we'll go. We're running out of time now, aren't we?
Getting
to the end of the show, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We've got one more piece of fan mail. Keep your fan mail coming in. We love reading them, and it's nice to know during these times that anyone listens. I mean, there's literally no excuse now. Once you've listened to all the other podcasts, you've always got us. But yeah, hope you're all well and staying safe. So this is a continuation from the last email. Right, okay. Also saw The Man Who Knew Too Much, Hitchcock. Didn't he do two of them, or was that 39?
He did two of them.
One of them, the second one, was James Stewart and Doris Day.
That's right.
Where the song Que Sera Sera comes from.
That's right.
But was a little bit underwhelmed by it. Yeah, I don't think it's a very good one.
I think it's brilliant. I love it. It's one of my favourites.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on that one, and unfortunately, I have the power to dismiss your opinion. It's a terrible one, guys. Never watch it. Nah, it's all right. I haven't seen it in ages, but it doesn't. Do you know what I mean? It's not Vertigo. It's not my favourite. Is North by Northwest. But
yeah.
So, but underwhelmed. Not sure why, as the cast are great. I know there's a story that he owed the studio a film, so he remade the 1934 one. Yeah, that sounds about right. I am on the hunt for that one.
It's out. I've got it.
Also enjoying
Blu-ray from Network, I think.
Good. Also enjoying the Ealing comedies that are on BBC Two in the afternoons this week, and then on iPlayer, Whiskey Galore was on Thursday, and I enjoyed that when I saw it at the Ipswich Film Theatre. Also, to download from Sky Arts, there's a super documentary on Buster Keaton. Yeah, I love Buster Keaton.
Yeah, I think there's a new one out. It might be that one, The Great Buster.
You know about Buster Keaton?
No.
His real name was obviously not Buster Keaton. We can't see. You need to hold that a bit lower.
She's saying better or worse. Yeah, do that in a minute.
I'll tell you this story first. Don't interrupt my flow, Natalie. Now I've got to build myself up to a head of steam again. Well, his name wasn't really Buster. I can't remember. Love you. His name wasn't really Buster. So they used to throw... What they did was they stitched a suitcase handle on his back, and they used to throw him around in the circus. The Keaton family used to throw him around in the circus, and so they said, "What a little Buster." So that wasn't his real name. And so the story is that when Diane Keaton needed to change her name, she was just like, "Oh, well, I'm a big fan of Buster Keaton, so I'm going to change my name from Diane whatever it was to Diane Keaton." And then when Michael Douglas had to change his name because there was already a Michael Douglas, he was just like, "Well, I'm a big fan of Diane Keaton, so I'm going to change my name to Michael Keaton." And so there's like this tradition of people that need to change their names because they were fans of, you know, once removed. It's like a copy of a copy of a copy. Yeah. Anyway, we could, fan club first, exclusive. We'll see how this goes. We're going to play better or worse. Nat is going to play better or worse with me, and we'll see how I do.
And we're going to do it with each other.
Can you explain to me the rules?
Well, what it is, Nick, it's better or worse, and you have to decide whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my opinion. Do you understand that?
I understand.
Beginning with Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry is your first name. But is Steve Guttenberg better or worse than Stephen Fry?
Worse.
I think he is, yeah.
Very high cards. High cards.
Ted Danson, better or worse than Steve Guttenberg?
Better.
Yeah, he is better. Tom Selleck, better or worse than Ted Danson?
Worse,
yeah. Tom Hiddleston, better or worse than Tom Selleck?
Worse.
Tom Holland, better or worse than Tom Hiddleston?
Better,
yeah. Tom Hardy, better or worse than Tom Holland?
Better.
Tom Cruise, better or worse than Tom Hardy?
Better.
Leonardo DiCaprio, better or worse than Tom Cruise?
Better.
Worse.
Oh!
But Helen Mirren, better or worse than Leonardo DiCaprio?
Better.
Better. Helen Hunt, better or worse than Helen Mirren?
Worse.
9! And I fit so close.
And do you know what? I knew that you were going to go with Cruise on that, but I think I just enjoy Leonardo DiCaprio.
I like him. It's a high card, Nick.
It's a really high card. I got 9 out of 10, though. Am I, like, in the top?
You'll be at the top.
I'll be right at the top. I could have been the first 10 out of 10, though, couldn't I?
You could have been the first 10 out of 10 for this year.
That's a shame. Right, well, good. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Lovely to talk to you, Nat. Lovely to talk to you, Natalie.
I'm going to play out with Diabolik Part 4 from Mario Bava's Danger Diabolik.
You
all very soon, or hear you all, or you'll hear us. Goodbye.